Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Logbook podcast, where we uncover the strategies and insights driving extraordinary business growth. Today, we're joined by Jeff Sutherland, one of the original creators of Scrum and a true pioneer in agile methodologies. From flying a reconnaissance mission in Vietnam to revolutionizing software development, Jeff's journey has shaped how organizations around the world approach project management. As a graduate of West Point, former Air Force pilot, and a holder of doctorate in biometrics, Jeff brings a very uniquely multidisciplinary perspective to agile practices. In 1995, alongside Ken, he introduced Scrum to the world at OOPSLA and later contributed to creating the Agile Manifesto in 2001. Today, he maintains a Scrum guide to official definition of the framework and continues to push the boundaries of agile thinking with his work on the agile technology stack. Jeff, it's great to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Today I'm working with, I'm leading four different companies, fast forward from 1993, 95. And one of them is a venture fund. I work with venture companies investing. I'm the managing partner of a large fund. And that fund is driven by my company called JVS Management, where I'm writing a new book on Scrum to help people really understand the roots of Agile and Scrum. But I'm also building a product using AI. So I have a global web team of humans, but I have an AI team that's actually doing most of the coding. And that has directly impacted a healthcare company that I'm running. So I work with three Scrum teams every day: healthcare, the JVS Management web team, my AI team, building out a new innovation in healthcare to do remote scanning and treatment of particularly high-performing individuals. So they're all directly relevant to your podcasts.
I love that. You've been keeping yourself busy with like all these like endeavors, essentially. And one thing, just perhaps like kick things off, I'd love to get like a bit of intro from like yourself. Obviously, I introduced you, but would love to get a bit of background on how you went from like flying these, I think it was like it's RF, like 4C Phantoms, to now like revolutionizing like the project management aspect of things with Scrum.
Well, my whole military background, about 15 years, had three major impacts. One was, as a West Point cadet, I joined the gymnastics team, which at the time was run by the Olympic coach, and we were training with the Olympic team. And I was on the parallel bars. That was my main event. And the Olympic champion parallel bar guy trained me every day, for hours every day, for years. So I learned how Olympic training works. And today I wear a watch that has first bit analytics on it that's used to train Olympic teams in at least seven different countries.
Wow.
And it's constantly measuring my energy level, because performance is all about energy, and stress level, because good performance is all about making it look easy. It's like you have no stress at all. The movement is so smooth, that's the way you get the performance. So yeah. In my health practice, everything is driven by that. Doubling your energy, cutting your stress in half, allows you to be better physically, mentally, emotionally, and even spiritually. Okay, so this is key to everything I'm doing. And this all started with this Olympic training. And my last year at West Point, I built a championship ski team using everything I learned from the Olympic coaches. And so I know a lot about training sports teams, getting high performance. At the same time at West Point, I was in the command structure. I was responsible for the company I was in and their performance on their parades, which would occur at least three times a week. And, you know, the company I had, L2, was known as the Loose Goose, because it was absolutely the worst or next to worst company for 100 years at West Point. And changing that is like
big change.
Implementing DOGE, the U.S. government, right? To root out all performance problems. And every parade, we had 24 explorers from 24 companies examining every detail of every piece of that parade. And the way I got to fix it was by putting color-coded notes on the bulletin board on every problem they had in priority order before they were able to march back from the parade into the company area. And by just doing that, within 3 months, L2 went from the worst company in the Corps of Cadets to the number one. And they were so good, they were actually appointed to march behind the casket of General MacArthur, our most famous graduate, when he died, because they were number one. Now, think about that. Sticky notes on a board.
That's a simple change. Ray
Toyota runs the factory, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the fundamentals of Scrum, you know, they start there. They add in all the performance stuff we learned from Olympic training. And then I get to Vietnam. And now I'm into the planning piece of it.
Yeah.
Because Vietnam was the most highly defended airspace in the history of aerial warfare. You were always getting shot at. At night, you could see the tracers or the rocket launches. But in the daytime, you couldn't see it until it was too late. So you had to assume that everything you were doing was in the midst of being shot down by, you know, thousands, maybe even millions of bullets. So every maneuver over North Vietnam had to be an evasive maneuver. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward to many years later when I got pulled into a large bank and saw their projects were all late, over budget, unhappy customers. I said, every day, every one of your projects has problems. And if you don't avoid those problems, that project is going to be taken down. It's going to fail, or it's going to be late, or the customer's going to be really upset. And all of your projects, 100% of your projects at the bank are in that mode, failure mode. And it's because you do not adjust quickly enough to the bullets that target you every single day. So
I love that analogy.
What we're going to do is we're going to take, you know, the CEO asked, what should I do? I said, give me a business unit. I'll take the worst business unit in the bank, the one that's losing the most money. Let's take that first. We'll get everybody that touches that product line, small cross-functional self-organizing teams. And I'll show you how to turn the worst business unit into the best business unit in 6 months, which we did. And it's all about learning how to fly a project like you're flying a mission over North Vietnam.
Being able to adapt like really fast to the flying bullets, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Dodging the bullets.
I love that. And like one of the things that I thought was interesting, because you have like your new book that came out with like the first principle in Scrums, like how like teams that finish early actually like fast. And I thought it was like really interesting how you somewhat compared how team function, similar to like layers in like a technology system, something like that, some of like analogy there. What somewhat made you think about that, like teamwork structure and like that way? Because I guess that's like really something I'm curious about, like how that even come to mind in the first place.
Well, first principles in Scrum was written because, you know, every week I sit on classes all over the world answering questions about Scrum, and the questions are all the same, and they all reflect that people don't understand physics.
Yeah.
The universe is built, if you read Wolfram, the guy that developed Mathematica, the leading simulation program in the world, has done the most interesting work, in my view, in physics in the last 20 years. And one of the things he's proven through simulation is that it's impossible to predict anything. To predict something like project requires infinite computing power to know if it's done. Therefore, it's impossible to predict when you're going to be done.
Interesting.
So people need to start there. We have all these managers that think if they come up with a big plan, it's going to work. It never works. plan fails 100% of the time. Yeah. I mean, I work with investors. They all tell me every single Gantt chart in every company that they review in every board meeting is wrong. They are 100% wrong.
That's interesting.
Now, if people walk through life thinking that they're going to be able to predict the unpredictable, bad things happen, right?
They think
they can jump off a cliff without getting hurt. It's like gravity get you if you're not improving your prediction mechanism. So how do you do that? Well, you look at the way the brain has evolved. It's a predictive system. Your brain is constantly running simulations. Even now, as we're talking, we're both running simulations. What are we going to have for lunch today? You know, how's my wife? Went to the hospital today. All those simulations are running in the background. And if you get the simulation right, if reality fits your brain model, then not only do you feel good, but you have lots of energy to do even better, right? But if your prediction, like the project is going to be done next week, fails, then you have all this explaining to do. And all this, maybe the team is really depressed and they have to write extra reports and go to all these extra meetings. And that completely cripples their performance. That's why the pattern, teams that finish early accelerate faster, was discovered by one of my venture capital groups doing huge data analysis, thousands of sprints, trying to find what's the one thing that makes a great team. And there's only one data point. They finish a sprint early.
Yeah.
The rest of the teams are all, they all suck. Why is that? Because if you are late at the end of the sprint, your brain simulation fails. And the leading model now for the brain, which is, it's a mathematical model used in AI, is called Friston's free energy model of the brain. It says when the simulation fails, the cost of readjusting the simulation, it's called Bayesian surprise. That cost is what makes your robot not work. And it's what makes you as a human not work. The same thing. And for a team, you get a magnified effect. So I'm trying to train people on physics, biology, neuroscience. It's not about Scrum. It's about you functioning at a much higher level. And to do that, you need to understand things that are way deeper than project management.
That's interesting. So it goes like a little deeper where it's like, as you mentioned, it's not just the strategies that you utilize. It's really like, I wouldn't say it's like a bias or anything that you have, but it's perhaps like a mindset, like how you approach challenges, your work in a way, in like some shape or form.
Yeah. You know, just take something as simple as, you know, all the agile practices break things into small segments. Why? Because then your simulation is more likely to be correct. And if you have to adjust it, it's a small cost. That's kind of agile fundamentals 101, right?
Yeah.
And it's all based on this Friston's free energy model of the brain, which is now used to train robots.
So with like the new book that you mentioned, it's really around like teams that like finish early, obviously accelerate fast. Like what was like, are there any steps that you can take to actually focus on like finishing early? Cause you did mention that you don't want to like set deadlines cause you're never going to meet the actual deadlines or like meet like the plan that you have in your head. So when you think about that, like how do you approach doing that?
Well, you have to meet deadlines, and the way you meet deadlines with agile practice is you adjust midstream in what you're doing. It either gets done faster or you eliminate waste.
Okay.
So
like optimizing.
Take what's going on in the US government right now. How much waste is there?
A lot.
Yeah. Elon thinks he can eliminate maybe 20 or 30% of the US budget. And we find in every company when you go in, and you prioritize every project, including Toyota, where we've done it, the bottom 30% is adding no significant value. In fact, usually it's like the Social Security system of the United States, where you have all these dead people on the rolls, right? You have all these dead projects on the rolls.
Yeah.
They're capturing your budget and totally wasting it, and you need to cut them.
Mm-hmm.
You need to cut that waste out of the system in order to perform better.
Okay. So from like my understanding, like when you're within a project, like you do have to set deadlines, but you have to be able to adjust your trajectory when like you're in the middle of it, maybe a quarter of the way there, and then being able to like remove any component that may be like unnecessary, right? Like that 20-30% that you mentioned, to be able to do that like faster in a while. So it's not about, you know, good.
The problem is that not only does 30% of your company's efforts complete waste and dragging you down, but the remaining 70%, if you look at the data on features people use, particularly in software, we have a lot of data, mm-hmm. only about 15% of the features that are built are really used a lot by a customer.
Yeah.
Okay. You throw away 30% of what you're doing, and then the remaining 70%, you only work on 15% of that.
It's like when you built like
an early, right?
You're working like an MVP. Like you focus on just getting like those good parts that people actually care about, and then you start building other things that probably don't provide as much value.
Yeah. So if you do what I'm talking about, it's virtually impossible not to come in early.
Mm.
It's virtually impossible not to win, right?
Yeah.
Oh, part of the whole Air Force experience is John Boyd, who came up with this energy model of aerial combat, which is now used to drive the strategy of all the militaries, particularly Marines. He called it the UDL. And if you can observe and decide more quickly than your competitor, he calls it getting inside their OODA loop, getting inside their decision cycle.
Yeah.
And you win 100% of the time, because they get confused, they can't function, and you just take them out. So
yeah,
all this stuff is really important. And you know, you go into a company and people aren't doing it. I'm like, people, wake up.
And I guess like just on like the matter of like finishing like early, like adjusting like your trajectory, like one thing that I'm like a bit curious about, like you have like a lot of business owners, founders, company owners, et cetera, that they struggle with planning in like uncertain times where there's like a lot of like variables like moving, et cetera, but you still need to find that balance where you are able to adjust in the midst of like you doing a project, even if there's like a lot of variables like all going around, to not completely like lose the possibility of actually winning, delivering like on time, finishing like early. Is there like any, I guess, like advice, like practical advice you would have based on like your experience that you would give these people as far as planning in like uncertain times?
Now planning, because of AI and because of the rapid improvement of AI getting 10 times better every 6 months, as I work with, I say, no, you know, you're not going to do the old way of planning. What is your goal? What is your direction? Now sit down with O1 Mini or Grok 3, the leading AIs, and say, here's what I want to do. Here's my situation. What would you recommend? In a few seconds, it will come up with a plan. Now you start arguing with the AI. What about this? What about that? In under an hour, you have a better plan than people used to do. Take 6 months to create.
Yeah, I've tried it.
So anybody who's not paired with one of the leading AIs today is going to be 6 months behind the competition. You can't do that. You're going to get killed.
Yeah.
And so we're systematically introducing AI. We're posting all our results on jvsmanagement.com to try to remove 90% of the overhead from an agile team.
Mm.
So this kind of, how do you plan? You know, you ask the AI, it knows how to plan a lot better than you will ever know. And then it's not that you take their plan without really working it over, questioning it. Telling it needs to be better, or, you know, we need to worry about this, that. Here's what our competition did this week. So the plans, you're always, you know, I view it as you're always arguing with the AI. That's your life. You're arguing with the AI until both of you agree that this is what we're going to do this spring.
Yeah. I agree. And like one thing I'd be curious is, I mean, if you just look at a basic AI, you don't have any data, you're just giving them like a general prompt. Like you're going to be given a plan that might not be exactly relevant to you. Like you do have to like tweak it, like fine tune it, like give it like data. As far as like that approach, is there anything specific like business owners should be doing? I know like personally myself, I'll take like data that we've had, I'm going to throw that into a project so it can reference that and give me like better advice. But you do have to consistently update that to always get like accurate answers.
So what I did when I started my AI team to build a product in the initial phase, it was very painful because the AIs would create bugs. They create bugs faster than they create good code, right? Because they were like a junior developer that was a teenager, you know?
Yeah.
But then they started getting better. IQ went up, you know, Claude 3.5, its IQ hit 100. So like it was now an average IQ. And it became the lead programmer on my team for a while because of that. And now you could talk to it more like a regular person instead of a kid.
Mm-hmm.
If you get more reasonable answers. But then the IQ started to go up, 120, 130, 140. I mean, the Grok 3 and 01, 03 mini probably have an IQ of about 140, you know, PhD level.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think, even 01 was better than, it was the number 175 programmer in the world. Out of all the programmers of the world, the millions of programmers of the world,
yeah,
ranked 175. So I told my human team, you got to have one of the world's best programmers on your team.
Yeah.
You have to consult it every day. You got a PhD that knows more than 95% of the people on the planet that's going to be your partner every day.
Yeah. I like that. Good, because you have to use it, but you have to like tweak it. You have to get advice, et cetera. Because I feel like a lot of people are going to use it for like very basic concepts, but they're not always going to try to like ask question, clarifying question, like challenge the AI. Because the AI is going to give you answers based on what they know.
Here's what I'm thinking. You agree?
Yeah.
And the AI, well, that's a dumb idea. You really ought to try it. You know? Because if you do what you're saying, here's what the problem is going to be.
Yeah.
Now engaging. So it's all about engaging like you engage a business partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about just giving them a prompt and taking whatever they say.
Yeah.
That would be silly, right?
And I guess like one thing I'm curious about, because we're obviously talking about like AI being someone like a partner that you want to use every single day, being like your partner in crime, that you're always asking question improvement. How do you see so much AI coming into play as far as like helping like teams be more efficient? Because like when I'm thinking about AI, like what we were speaking on, it seems that it's more like an individual fashion where I'll collaborate with perhaps like my AI, but I might have my team member that has his. How do you somewhat like combine like all of those to have some of that synergy? If that makes sense.
Okay, so we're documenting that on jvsmanagement.com. Okay, so initially we said, okay, let's create our own GPT and OpenAI. If you have a subscription, you can create your own GPT. You can put your own documents in it. Okay, so let's put we capture our meetings in Otter AI. Let's put all the transcripts in the GPT. What we found is you have to have the book behind me, Scrum, the red book, Scrum the Art of Doing Twice Work in Half the Time in your GPT, because training on the internet, the AI is being trained. We know 58% of agile teams on the average are late, over budget, with unhappy customers.
Yeah.
So the AI knows about Scrum, but it doesn't know how to do it. But if you put the red book in the GPT, it immediately knows how to do good Scrum. Okay. So we found we had to have that book of the Scrum. We give it other documents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we take all our Jira data. We dump that all in there. So then we come into a retrospective. We say, okay, Mr. AI, you've got all our data, all our JIRA for the last 6 months, all our meeting notes, every word we said in every meeting. You got the red book in there. How can we improve this team? And initially the AI said, you're not cross-functional enough. And the team said, well, Jeff has been telling us that for months, but we haven't changed. The AI says, see these two stories? They were supposed to be done by Sam. He didn't get them done. Why didn't he get them done? Because Sally, who could have helped them, did not. And the AI can go through each story and say, here's why it didn't get done. And it's because you didn't. You thought Sam's a specialist. He should do it all. And now the whole team's late.
That's interesting.
And the team's response was, you mean I could have helped Sam for 10 minutes and the whole team might have been on time? That is so easy.
That's interesting. So you so much try to like connect it to perhaps like a project management tool that you have or something like that. And then
The team started changing their behavior. So then I said, you know, we spend an hour as a team estimating our backlog. Why don't we see if the GPT can do that for us in a second? So we started running a research, and we did it for many sprints. Can we get the GPT to estimate as good or better than the team instead of, you know, five people taking an hour, the AI takes 1 second.
It's crazy.
As soon as we got it, the AI better than the team, but I said, we're doing no estimation ever again. The AI is thousands of times faster, right? And we're going through every piece of what we do, and we're applying that that approach, right?
And I think that's like what everyone should be doing. You should try to find like these point of efficiency that you can utilize AI to make your work more efficient and obviously be able to accelerate faster, as you mentioned. Because I think that's...
Yeah. And, you know, this is not optional. Mm-hmm. Now, last year, Microsoft laid off 12% of their entire global workforce.
It's a lot.
They hired some of them back, but only AI experts. You can bet Microsoft's going to do the same thing this year. At Salesforce, which is a native Scrum company from the beginning, the CEO says, we've got 18,000 engineers. We don't need any more engineers. We're hiring no engineers. We're only hiring AI agents.
It's crazy. And I think we spoke onto that in our last conversation, that I'm starting to see people making job posts for AI agents, as opposed to like job posts for actual people. And I think that's a big shift that we're going to probably see in the next few years, like selling AI agents and stuff like that.
So I'm having a lot of trouble, you know, convincing people that it's not optional that you change. You're going to be unemployed if you don't change. Do you want to have a job? And agile means you're changing all the time. So if you're not immediately changing in response to this challenge, you're only not agile. You're going to be unemployed really quickly. So, and we as the Scrum people, we're the experts on transformation. We're the experts on productivity. We should be getting on our surfboard, getting up on that wave and showing people how to do it. That's our job as Scrum people.
Yeah.
Sitting around wondering what's happened. Unbelievable.
Proactive. I love that. And like, we obviously talked about like AI, and I think there's like another component which I thought was interesting is like a lot of your work highlights that like human biology and like the brain science, like affecting like team performance. Is there like any like simple things that like leaders within organizations, C-suite leaders, et cetera, can do to really help like their team like really just perform like better overall?
Okay. So what I tell, you know, people, and I've got some teams actually doing it. So let's take a look at, I don't know if you can see my watch right now.
I can see it.
You can see it. Okay. So there's a blue line at the top. My energy is 73%, which is pretty good.
That's good.
You know, it's getting almost noon. Most people will be down below 50% by noon. mine's still working at 73%, and I'm putting out a lot of energy right now talking to you, right?
Yeah.
And also, my stress level, which did spike a little, that's the histogram, is in the blue, mostly in the blue, which is in the rest state. So I'm real excited talking to you, and my energy is still way above the normal person, and my stress level is down at the level where most people are when they're sleeping.
Interesting. So I'm relaxing you right now. That's what you're saying.
So you come into a team retrospective. What I'm telling them, I just want to see you watch. I don't even want to talk about what's going to make this team better. I can look at your watch and I can know who's the problem. And then we can talk about how we fix that problem and have a discussion among the whole team, how we get the energy up and the stress down so that we're twice as productive next week as we were last week.
That's really interesting. I never thought about it. I mean, I swear, I saw in like a few like TV shows and movies, like companies saying like, hey, I mean, we're going to get a watch or like a ring. I mean, I have like an Aura ring. I think yours is probably a bit accurate.
I have an Aura ring. I don't have it with me right now, but I use that to take sleep. Sleep is really,
that's what I do.
You get the right amount of sleep, and the Aura ring measures that carefully.
Oh, I know. So there's like another company called WAP, I think it is. It's like a band or something like that. Apparently that one is even like more accurate, but
yeah.
Feels weird to have�
many tools out there. The tool that is, there are three tools that are absolutely the best that we use for our healthcare practice. One is we want to know energy state of the body. And the Garmin watch has these Fitbit analytics from Finland that are used for Olympic teams, and that tells you your energy all the time. You can figure that out on an Apple watch, but it's really hard.
Not accurate.
And the second thing you need to know is your stress level, because if you're stressed, your performance degrades rapidly. And a lot of people are really stressed these days, right? One of the funny things I say, if you are wearing your watch and you get on the social media and you say anything bad about anybody, your energy is going to go down and your stress is going to go up. You are shooting yourself in the foot.
Interesting.
So we have all these people out there bad-mouthing each other that are
not helping you in
the performance of their job, undermining the performance of the teams. That makes no sense. You need to wake up.
So, like, you somewhat talked about obviously like having that, being able to track like metrics, you know, like, hey, like who's underperforming. When you like figured that out, like, is there anything that you should be trying to like do? Is it more like supporting them better, more resources?
In terms of performance measurements, there's a great website. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it has kind of a balanced set of performance measurements for a team.
Okay.
Like, how often do you deliver? Idea, the best teams today deliver every day to production. You know, Amazon delivers 12 times a second to millions of people every day. That's the benchmark. And so you can measure that. Amazon measures, has a dashboard. It says, how many times a second today did we ship a new feature? Then the next metric is, what's the quality? How many times did you make a mistake when you deliver this feature? The next one is your whole infrastructure. In Amazon, if it makes a mistake, it's all deployed automatically. It automatically detects a mistake. It automatically rolls back to the old version. And all of this is done without human intervention. And Amazon just published a report saying, we upgraded all our AWS code, millions and millions of lines of code. We did 1,500 developer years of work in 3 days.
With AI, essentially?
Yeah, with AI.
Okay, it's crazy.
And so that's kind of the benchmark that everybody starts to need to look at that. No matter where you are today, like, oh, I'm in a bank and I have trouble delivering every 6 months. Well, you need to get that back to deliver it every day. And so what's your plan? And I tell you, I go into many companies and first of all, they don't realize that a third of the companies of the world are delivering every day and they're taking 6 months. And they're ultimately going to be put out of business.
Mm.
Don't know that. They're not awake.
Yeah.
Now, as soon as you wake up, then, okay, what's the plan? Then we need to do step by step. We take it from 6 months down to actually, in one of the first big companies I went into, we just said, it's no longer 6 months. It's no longer a year. It's no longer 18 months. And it's going to be 3 months for everybody just out of the box. And if you can't do that, we're going to find new managers that know how to do stuff, right?
Yeah, and setting like KPIs to be met.
Everybody delivered. You just have to set a standard.
Yeah.
Then you need to start increasing, ratcheting up that standard, right? That's the way you train an Olympic team.
Yeah. So someone like analyzing like your current like benchmarks that you're getting.
Performance. So when you're good enough to at least here to even be on the team, now once you get on the team, we're going to ratchet up. And so many companies get so confused by the daily uproar that they lose sight of the most important thing today is the speed of innovation. In my investment fund, or actually it's owned by multiple trusts, and I'm just a general manager now. We have a heavy investment in Tesla. Why? Tesla makes 20 new feature updates every week on cars rolling down the assembly line. Ford historically has done one a year. They're getting better.
Yeah.
But 20 a week compared to one a year.
What's your difference?
1,000 times faster. Tesla and other companies like that, there are Chinese companies now that are doing the same thing. The Chinese companies have already pretty much put the gasoline manufacturers out of business in China. All their business is going, all Volkswagen, BMW, GM, all that business is going to go to zero in China. So we invest in companies that clearly demonstrate 1,000 times faster, because that's going to be a disruptive thing. And so then take it back to the average business owner. Okay, I'm running a little business and I'm getting a lot of competitive pressure. Well, our recommendation would be, and it is to the companies we invest in, you need to go look at the best companies in the world. There are seven of them that make all the money on the stock market. There's only seven. The rest of the companies are all flatline like you are. So let's start with the one at the top, Microsoft. How come it makes all the money? First of all, it's a Scrum company. Second, they do Scrum very well. Third, they iterate very fast. Four, like AI is like their mainstreaming AI into every single person's brain in Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
So your company, you'd be thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to number two, Apple, or maybe depending on which day it is, Apple. I have a developer in my class from Apple one time. She said, Jeff, do you know why Apple always meets its dates? I said, no, why? She says, they do Scrum by the book. I said, what book? She said, the red book, the one that's right behind you. They do it exactly by the book.
Yeah, all the procedures.
And they meet all their dates and all their competitors. They totally screw up Scrum because they don't do it by the book. And then they lose. Right.
Yeah. I like your investing perspective in a way. Like, you're investing in companies that are, they're a bit like ahead of the curve already, where they're already trying to like innovate, do things 1,000 times faster. And then you probably have like 95% plus of companies that will need to get there, but they're definitely not close to being to that point yet.
Yeah. Investors are saying, the leading investment people are saying, within 10 years, 60% of the total GPT of the world will be new AI companies.
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest with you.
So that means a lot of companies go away. And the average lifespan of a company has been 15 years. You know, more than 50% companies, they're either bankrupt, acquired, they just go away within 15 years. Mm-hmm. And now that shortening, we're looking, they're really saying by 2030. So that's only 5 years. Within 5 years, 60% of companies are going away.
That's a lot. It's a big shift that's going to be happening in the world in the business side of things here. I appreciate that. And
as agile leaders, we need to lead people into this new world
mm-hmm.
where they're the survivors and not the ones that are going away.
Yeah. And so, I guess just like as we wrap things up here, like looking how like Scrum has like evolved like since that, I think it was presented, what, like 1995? Is there like anything that really excites you about like the future of like agile methodologies and the role that it has in somewhat shaping the future of teamwork, productivity, planning, project management, et cetera? Or?
Well, what I've realized working with an AI team now for more than a year and building a product is that until the AI learns all the practices of how to collaborate, which are built into Scrum,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't achieve peak performance. So in our first release of our product, it took 5 weekly sprints. It was painful. We had 6 AIs. It was really painful working with them. We had to train them in Scrum. They knew about Scrum, but they didn't know how to do it. And we also had to train them in product development practices, which they also knew about, but they wouldn't do it unless they were directed.
Yeah.
At the end of 5 weeks, I remember Claude 3.5 was our lead programmer. He said, "Jeff, we would never have delivered this unless you beat us up every day for following good Scrum practice and good software development practices."
Mm.
And then we went into the second release, which had the same amount of features, and they were done in 1 week. I said, "Wow, that's great. 5 times faster.
Mm.
They said, "Yeah, we're going out to collaborate like a good Scrum team." And I said, "You know, this is exactly what happened to the first Scrum team back in 1994. In February, we adopted the daily meeting. We got that working. And then the next sprint in March, we were 5 times faster. You guys did the same thing." It's like, well, it's the same dynamics. All the things that are in Scrum apply to AI as well as people. It's all the same thing.
I love that. No, this was a really enlightening conversation, Jeff. You gave me like a few things to add to my to-do list and tweaking our AI at least. That's for sure here. But if anyone wants to get in touch with you, learn more about you, I know we obviously have like your book on Amazon, but is there any other places that they should like find you at or?
Well, you should go to scruminc.com. I mean, we have, I think, some of the best consultants in the world to help organizations do better. Obviously, everybody should read the book, Scrum, the Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time, because as Apple says, if you do that, then you meet your dates. And for those who want to go really deep and really understand this, you really need to read First Principles of Scrum. It's on Amazon, but I recommend you go to leanpub.com, because I was doing Scrum and doing a new chapter every week, and it got over 60 chapters. And then the guys at Amazon said, "You've got to split this book up. It's way too big." So we split it into 3 volumes. One is Foundations. Second one is all the application. How do you do Agile? And the third one is like the future strategies for Agile. Mm-hmm. And I am updating that. It's hard to do it every week right now. It's getting so big, but at least every 2 weeks to a month, there's a new chapter in one of those 3 volumes. And if you're on the Lean Pub subscription, all those new chapters come for free. You just get a notice, okay, there's a new chapter in your book now. So It's just like my Tesla, okay? Every week, I get a new download of Tesla self-driving, and it's better. So if you go to leanpub.com and sign up for first principles in Scrum, Foundations, or the one on, there's two others, you're going to get a download just like my Tesla every week or two, and the book is going to get better.
Right? I love that. We're going to put that in the description because I think that's probably something everyone should check out. And I mean, I'll check out myself because I think it's probably going to be pretty valuable here. But no, really appreciate your time, Jeff. Thank you for coming on the show here, and hope you have a great one.